Welcome to Out of Rotation, volleyball talk for players, coaches, and fans. Presented by the American Volleyball Network. Here's your host, Dan Meskin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Exciting conversation today. We got Anna Stevenson Hall, a Louisville legend, one of my favorite players that I've ever had the opportunity to coach. And a little bit different introduction here. This was a podcast that we recorded, I don't know, probably 7-8 months ago, her last stint with USA, right before she was going overseas to play pro in Italy. She's since come back from Italy, and she's back with USA again. And it's a really good conversation about kind of her grassroots, how she got into volleyball, her experience with USA, talks a lot about mental health and kind of the mental preparation of the game. But in talking to her as I was getting ready to release this podcast, she's like, oh my God, I don't even know what I said, and it was so long ago. So I thought we'd try something a little bit different, and I would let her kind of introduce this podcast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give her a call here, and we're going to put her on the spot and have her introduce her podcast, Anna Stevenson Hall, Team USA Then and Now. So let's give her a ring, and we'll see if she picks up.
Hey.
Steve, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm at the pool watching video right now.
You're at the pool watching video? What's the weather like out in Anaheim?
It's, let me see. It's 80 right now.
Not bad.
And it feels great.
So do you guys train in the morning typically and then have the afternoons off, or is this just a Friday thing?
Yeah, it's every day from about 8 till noon, and then we lift 3 times a week, and then I've got the rest of the day for myself.
With that, I normally introduce the episode, and this will be like the first time I haven't, because I want you to introduce your podcast that we're going to listen to, our conversation with Anna Stevenson Hall. I want you to take the reins and introduce it.
Oh boy, I've never done something like that. I hope everyone enjoys hearing kind of like the journey of getting to Louisville. I don't know if we talked about Auburn at all, but the journey of me as a player, I guess, getting there, and then kind of like the mindset shift from college where everyone's supporting you to pro, where you have to be a little more independent and I don't know, believe in yourself a little more. I have you in my corner still, but I would say it's a lot more focused on self now. But gosh, you got to have a balance of focusing on self and not being selfish. I don't know, Dan. I don't know how to introduce it.
I thought that was perfect. What was that like? So were you like fangirling over her, or are you like big time pro player now and you're like, oh, it's just Jordan Larson? What was that like?
I was trying to play it cool, but we were meeting our new sports team psychologist, and Jordan was just like giving her like spiel about the last quad where they won the Olympics, and she was talking about how she's not the kind of person who needs physical touch, she's not into fluffy stuff, she's just the kind of person who stays in her lane and she's really focused, but she has to be able to give grace to people who are like Annie Drews, who need the handhold and the rah-rah stuff.
So where do you fit on that? Where do you fit on that paradigm?
I think I'm more towards the fluffy stuff. But Annie said there's nothing wrong with that. We all need different things.
Nothing wrong with the fluffy stuff. So, and I know, did you guys work with Sue Inquist last quad? And I say you, but you weren't with that quad. I know she's done some amazing things. I actually talked about her. I saw her in a coach's clinic once, and I still use some of her different things she talked about. She's fantastic. So you guys are transitioning to a new mental performance or sports psych?
Sue is still like our culture coach, but she can't always be here. And so I think this woman is, she's like used to be a Navy SEAL, and she works with athletes, and she's brought in to work more like one-on-one with people. So today I got to have like a 30-minute meeting with her.
Very cool. If you don't mind sharing, what goes over in an initial meeting like that? Is it, again, kind of how do you like to be coached, you know, or is it just kind of general, tell me about yourself? What's an initial meeting like at the highest level with a mental performance coach?
We filled out a survey, and you had to like rank yourself from 1 to 10, 1 being really good at it, you use this a ton, and 10 being like, I'm unfamiliar with this, about do you visualize your mistakes? Do you visualize making a mistake before the serve? What do you do in practice to stay focused? Do you find yourself, like your attention, you find it wandering during practice? And then we went over that, and went over some ways to cope with like some things that I think about. It was kind of, I felt like I just like word vomited on her. Like, I feel like I just dumped every little fear on her, but it was quick. It was good.
I love it. What's one takeaway from that? As far as, there were a lot of great questions there of, what do you visualize? How do you respond to errors? What's one thing that you remember from that meeting that you're like, oh, it was nice that I talked through that. Now I have clarity about that. Did you learn anything in there? Or on the flip side, was there something that you already knew? Yeah, I know that I'm this way.
I have a lot of negative self-talk, like most people she spoke to today and yesterday, she said, which is kind of nice to know that I'm in the same boat as like a Jordan Thompson or someone who also does this. We talked about neutrality, like it's not wrong, it's not bad that I feel self-doubt or I'm like scared sometimes. I just need to like be neutral about it and let the thought go. I don't need to just think about it and sit there on it. And she said, when I have these, I said that I often, I can visualize myself making the same mistake over and over. Like overseas, I remember in the fifth set, like three different times, I hit the same ball out, cross body, same spot, same backspin. And from then on in the fifth set, I would be like, I literally can see myself doing that again right now. And I told her about that. And she said that you have to label things as true or untrue. And you got to know when something's not like true, or as she says, capital T true. Like, it is not true that I'm going to do that again, but the more you like think about it, the more I label that as fact, the more likely I am to do it. And I just need to be neutral about this stuff and not hold on to it so tightly.
Well, it's almost like that's actually really profound, almost, that like I haven't heard that before. And I love the way she explained it, where, yeah, it was true in the past, but you're thinking about the future, and that's not true. And that's, you yeah. just blend the two together of like, this happened. Like, that's a really cool, I like the being neutral and then labeling it as, that's not true. Like, where I'm thinking about the future, there's, I'm still yet to create that. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, let's back up. I wanted to kind of get the state of where you're at, which is pretty unbelievable. You're training with the national team. You've got a shot in, you know, for Paris in 2024, which is really exciting. I want to get to that eventually, but I want to back it up to the girl from Lawrence, South Carolina. And I want to hear about just your first volleyball memory or experience. So how'd you find the game? When did you know that you wanted to get playing it in college? Give me a little catch up of what it was like for Anna Stevenson at the time, Anna Hall now, but Anna Stevenson growing up in Lawrence, yeah. South Carolina.
I think the earliest would be passing in the yard with my mom after work. Literally just passing back and forth, and she could back set and I couldn't. And I remember thinking, really cool that my mom could do that. And when we were cleaning out my room, when I was home, maybe last year, after I got back from Turkey, we found this notebook and it had like my top 10 goals. And it was like, be able to dunk, play basketball at Presbyterian College, or play volleyball at Presbyterian College or Clemson. So I guess I did kind of want to play in college. I didn't really know how to do that or anything. And then it happened.
So at what point did it transition from, I wanted to play basketball or volleyball, to, okay, you know, sometime right around high school, I would think you're like, all right, I'm doing this volleyball thing.
And basketball ended quickly. I don't really know why I made that a goal. I didn't even play but a year. But I think high school is when I thought college was for real, and committed to Auburn and was all excited about that.
All jacked up. Talk to me a little bit. Talk to me a little about the initial recruiting process, because as I've done this podcast, I've talked to older players. I haven't done any current college players. I don't really plan to. I like getting people who are done with their college experience and can kind of give just some perspective on it. Now, for all of that, though, the recruiting process is so different. We're coming up on June 15th here, and it's going to be a lot later recruiting than it was for you. So I would assume you were getting letters as early as eighth grade, maybe freshman year, and then making your decision soon after that. It was happening so early. So take me through a little bit of the process of committing to Auburn, figuring that out, and kind of what you learned from that commitment. Because obviously, as we'll get to, you ended up transferring to Louisville after a couple of years. So take me through the initial process, though, of what it's like when you don't really know what you don't know yet, and you're going through that recruiting process.
I think we were just shocked. Like, my mom said my dad cried teared up when he saw college coaches on my court.
And I believe that after meeting him.
Yeah, I do too. It's crazy to think back that far, but it was just so surprising. I was 15, and I think, yeah, I was in ninth grade when I committed. And
Ninth grade when you committed. So when did you get your first like letter? When did you first be like, oh, I need to start doing this recruiting thing? Was it that year? Was it eighth grade?
Ninth grade. It was actually, I'm sorry, I committed sophomore year, but it all started in summer after ninth grade, I think.
So you didn't even have your license yet. You couldn't even drive and you were trying to figure out where you were going to school.
Yeah. And I remember I didn't know anything about college volleyball. And I remember Purdue was interested. And they invited me to a camp. And I remember telling my dad no, because they wore short sleeve jerseys.
The important
thing. And little did I know that Purdue was like actually a really good place to go and learn and get better. And I remember thinking Auburn was perfect because football was a big deal. Everyone would know where I was going. It would be cool. Campus was great. Coaches were awesome. They were very kind and good at recruiting. And, but I think it was a lot of the wrong reasons I was excited to go, kind of.
Yeah, and you told me something that stuck with me. I always think about in recruiting, as you said, in the initial commitment, it was like, I want to go somewhere where if volleyball was gone, this is where I'd be really happy. Like, yeah. I could see myself as just a normal student here. And you told me, I remember in the recruiting process to Louisville, which we'll get to, that was like, you wanted to do the opposite in the transfer process. So what did you learn? Can you expand on what you didn't know about, okay, take the volleyball completely out of it. Here's where I'm going to commit for volleyball just based on the school or the location or whatever else. What'd you learn from that?
The coaches, when I committed there, they were like, you want to make sure you're somewhere where you can be happy if volleyball's taken away. But unless you're really unfortunate and you're injured and you can't play volleyball anymore, that doesn't happen. And Auburn was the perfect place. Great facilities, football, big deal. Campus is beautiful, but the reality was you don't spend much time just chilling on campus, walking around, having fun, and you spend a lot of time winning or losing games. And the facilities at Auburn were fantastic for volleyball. They're really fortunate to have what they have. But that is obviously not what makes someone content with a program. And so when I was transferring, I definitely wanted to kind of not turn a blind eye to the facilities and campus, but it was not so far up on my list of importance.
Yeah. And just wrapping up on Auburn, because you're such a connector and you're always like super invested wherever you're at. What's just your favorite memory of Auburn? Because I know you made some lifelong friendships and probably had some great memories there. What sticks out is just like, this was awesome in my couple of years at Auburn.
I think my first year, just the seniors, I don't know. It was just, they were really good at including us. And I remember I sliced the back of my leg open at one of their houses. It was like a part. I wasn't drinking or anything, but you can't include this.
You know your mom and dad are going to listen to it. You're like, all right, I wasn't drinking at this party, but.
I wasn't. But we were over for a party, and my academic advisor actually called to check on me about some assignment. Like, they were really good to us, but it was like 11 o'clock. I don't know why they did that. And I was trying to rush out of the room, sliced my leg open. One of the girls who was in nursing tried to like fix it up a little bit, and we let it go, and it got really, really, really infected. And I still have a scar. But it was just like, that's a core memory there. And everyone was trying to help out.
That's college in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, cool. So we'll fast forward to kind of where we met, which was through the portal. What's your memory of just the transfer portal was brand new for you? What was your memory of just like this transfer thing? Because you were kind of the first or second year of like, okay, the portal's here, and this is a very simplified process, where before the process of transferring was like, you got to call a club coach, and then they got to call. It was just so like no one knew how to do it. And you were kind of the guinea pig for the portal. What did you learn, or what was your experience with the portal?
I remember emailing compliance at Auburn, and they said they put my name in. And so I was emailing coaches left and right. I emailed you guys. Y'all are my first email. And nobody was replying to me at all. And I was like, this is the worst decision I've ever made. Like, I've really lost it. I've screwed up. And then I think the next day you guys emailed me back and said that it just took like 24 hours or something for your name to officially go in the portal. But after that, it was kind of overwhelming. And I did not realize that you only got 5 visits. And I think I kind of squandered some of those away, which didn't matter in the end. But I think you guys kind of helped me out, because I was going to visit UCLA. I didn't really want to, but I had a hard time saying no. And you guys were like, why would you waste their time? And I eventually said no. So I guess knowing how to say no is good.
Well, I actually found your initial email, and it was a very good email that you sent. It was very, very positive. So a little bit of the highlights. I did love Auburn. It was always hold a special place in my heart, but I want to make a change that would most positively impact me and my volleyball career. I would love to talk to you about possibly being a middle blocker, blah, 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 blah. It's got your number on there. And then we replied, hey, we've been anxiously awaiting to reply till your name is actually in the portal. So what you were talking about, we were like, we cannot wait to email you back. So I actually have the email that I sent you back is like super long. It's got links to video.
You did good.
It's a pretty wild email, but I think we had like 3 days to prepare it because you didn't get your name in the portal forever.
Yeah.
And then your email back says, so once we finally could, you said, hey, I was actually super paranoid yesterday because I thought that that I didn't submit the right name. I kept refreshing my email all day and I had zero emails. It's just really funny. So then you go through that recruiting process. I'm always curious for people that have played for her and kind of gone through the recruiting process. But what was your first experience or just, first impression of Dani?
Emails and everything was she's awesome, really friendly. And then in person, I remember being a little intimidated.
What's intimidating about her? Because after you meet her, she's a big teddy bear. It's like, why is everybody so intimidated by her?
After Boone.
That's true.
She was really friendly, but she wasn't like going out of her way. Like she didn't make me feel like I was the end all be all of Louisville, which was part of the appeal. You guys actually said, I think it was her. She said, we don't need you here, but you would be a good addition.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that got me.
You ended up being a pretty good addition. So yeah, we did. I think we did return both of our starting middles and you were in an opportunity to compete with them. And that's always a fine line recruiting to walk, because if you are all in with these recruits of just like, come here and you'll start right away and all that, it's like, okay, what have you been doing with your current roster that you're just know right away, I'll be better than all of them. I always think that's an interesting dynamic recruiting wise, just with player development. But all right. So your first year then is 2019. We get fourth, I believe, in the ACC. We kind of sneak into that tournament. We're unranked, and we play our first two rounds at Western Kentucky. And do you know where I'm going with this, with Western Kentucky?
Yeah.
So Western Kentucky, you get your first experience, the NCAA tournament. You're just, you got starry eyes, all that. And I'm going to actually go to the press conference where Danny's reaction to it, whatever you said something that wasn't even that bad, but it was just like a Western Kentucky, they had only lost to us. And you're like, oh, it'd be great if we were the only one to beat them twice. And Western just took that little tiny bit, and it was all over Twitter and all that. What was that experience like for you? Because for us, it's like, oh, here's the sweetest person in the world who had like this tiny little whatever, and it just like blew up for some reason in Bowling Green. What was that like?
I was really nervous about it. I mean, they booed me when I came out on the court, and
they booed you like hard. They have a great student section there. It was like sold out. I don't know, 7,000, 8,000 people, and they did. I remember that. I was like, whoa, everybody got the news.
Yeah. And I don't think I was really good enough to like back it up either at that point. And I remember hitting, I don't know what you guys call it anymore. I think we called it an eye. It was like between a slide.
Yeah,
and
like
a
an inside slide. Yeah.
And I remember my knee like clipped the tape coming up. Like I was just crazy sloppy, like out of my rhythm. And I was just like replaying it in my head. And luckily we did not lose, because I remember thinking like, how embarrassing is that going to be? But we didn't lose.
And we won in five. Claire Chausse was like throwing up during the game. She had the flu. Alexa Hendricks had the flu the day before. That was a crazy match. Do you feel like when you look back at that match though? Cause I do remember like in the moment, just like, oh man, like she's got to like walk through this. There's nothing else you can do. You just have to walk through it. It's like a tough situation. But is it one of those things you ever look back on of like, man, that really like hardened me. Like I am like a tougher mental person for going through that challenge? Or was it just kind of one of those things of like, oh man, like I learned a lesson, but that sucked. Like do you ever look back on that as like, man, that really like, that was a grind. That was like a big moment of like, man, I'm mentally tough now. I don't know. I just wonder, because that's a challenge.
Yeah, I think I don't ever think about it like that, because I think it gets overshadowed by the Texas match.
Well, that's what we're going to get to.
So I often don't think about that game. But yeah, I agree. I think it did. But I totally forgot about it.
That match is really lost when you think about that year, just because, okay, we beat Western Kentucky and then we go to Texas. Texas is, I think, the number two seed overall. We're unranked. They haven't lost at home in however many years and all that stuff. And we come out and we jump up 2-0 on them. And then we end up winning in five. And again, we'll just go through the gamut of emotions for you. So you had the Western Kentucky match, which was like, oh my gosh, like what's happening? And then you have the final kill against Texas. And it's like what we call a waterfall. It hits the middle blocker, kind of goes between the net. And if you go back and watch the replay, Danny like is running on the court because she's the only one who like is like, this is happening. Like we just won. And your reaction is just kind of like, I want you to walk me through what it was, because you kind of like shrugged your shoulders like, meh, I guess we did it. Like, what was that? Like, take me into that moment of what that reaction was and what that felt like.
Tori, I think other people didn't think that I thought it was a kill, but I knew it was a kill. But it just...
Then where was all the fire? I mean, you literally shrug your shoulders, you put your palms up, and you're like, meh, that was a kill.
It was just ridiculous. I hit into a double block. I think there was like a two-hitter rotation, and we overloaded. I don't even know if I could run the slide well at that point, but we overloaded. And then Tori set me. I don't even know who was out there, like on the pin. But Aiko was crushing it, so I don't think I really expected the ball either. But it was just like disbelief that got a kill, that I got set, that we won. So.
Well, that was I often wonder with that year. We had to turn around and play the next day. I think like mid-evening. It wasn't late, but it wasn't like the afternoon.
Yeah.
And they've since added the extra day off. Which, like, when you have a huge win like that, just the refresh of that. We played okay in spots, but we ended up getting swept by Minnesota. Do you think of that match ever, or do you even remember that match? Because for me, I've watched it maybe once or twice, and I really don't remember anything about that match. We didn't pass well. Again, we got swept. They played some great defense early, and it just kind of felt like the air was out of the tires. Like, what's your memory of kind of the finish of that year?
I actually hit the ball out to lose us that game.
See, I don't even remember that.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And 2019 was like my hyper motivated year. Like you made me that sheet when you recruited me. I had people's statistics, first team All-American, second team. I had it on my wall every day.
So for context, as people go through this story. So yeah, we made a sheet kind of your first year of like, here's where you're at. You want to be an All-American. That's a goal for you. Here's where All-Americans are at. And this is how you can get there. And it really wasn't as big a gap as it might've looked. It's kind of, I think, the thought of that. We also brought in kind of different ways. We're going to do that with athletic training and, you know, with strength and conditioning and all of that. But before fast forwarding with 2019, or maybe this kind of transition us to 2020, because you talked about your super motivating year, and to just take the curtains back from a coach, I do remember a big goal of yours was like to be an All-American. When you first got to Louisville, a lot of your goals were kind of individual based. It was just like, man, I want to be an All-American. It's cool when people say that, but then, you know, you don't realize that like it only comes with team success. Like there's very few All-Americans that don't make the tournament, if at all. And there's even less All-Americans that, you know, or there's less All-Americans than, you know, if you get punted in the first round or whatever, all that stuff matters. So there was kind of a transition for you where you did kind of, and it's not sacrificing the me for the we, because I do think why you were so motivated is why our team got good and you were a big part of that. But it felt like 19 to 20, there was a little bit of a shift of what you were focused on or just what your mentality was. So you talked about 2019 was my super motivated year. Like, talk me through what that transition was going to be. Because in 19 to 20, you made a huge leap. You become an All-American. And you can just tell, like, you almost walked around different. Like, what was that?
So in 2019, I remember we beat Cincinnati. And Melanie had a great game. It was like her and Jordan Thompson. And they each had so many kills. I don't even know how many.
I have to give some context to that match. Won. That's one of the craziest matches. We won in five against Cincinnati. Mel McHenry ends up, now that year she ended up tearing ACL, which was a bummer. She probably would have been the player of the year in the ACC. Her and Jordan Thompson, who's at Cincinnati at the time, go toe-to-toe. They both had over 30 kills, and we ended up winning in five. It was literally, I mean, Jordan Thompson's now a gold medalist and all that, and Mel McHenry on that day was toe-to-toe with her. It was really, it was a crazy match. So just some context for what that match was. So that was in 2019, like you said.
So we won and we got in the locker room. And I remember you came in and you were like, you guys just beat a future Olympian. And I was like, I didn't even care because I kind of sucked that game. And I remember we got on the bus and I don't know if you called me up to your seat or if I went up there to just talk about the game. But you were like, I think the problem here is, Anna, that you care more about how you played in a game that was like pretty special for our team. And it's not that big of a deal how you played. And that stuck with me. And then I rolled my eyes at you once at UK and Danny freaking tore into me in the locker room the rest of the game, chirping in my ear. That was terrifying.
What did I say that you rolled your eyes? I remember you rolling your eyes. It's crazy to think that that was you, but you did. And then we addressed it, you know, how we addressed it. But do you remember what I said? I don't remember what I said, but I do remember the interaction.
You were telling me to fix something, and I was playing the best of anyone at that. I think I was having a pretty good game, but we were sucking. And again, I didn't care because I was like, I'm touching everything. I'm doing so good. And yeah, I don't know what you said, but it was something to fix. And I rolled my eyes. And so I think in 2019, there's just all these little wake up calls. And then I hit the ball out to lose to Minnesota. And I remember finishing and thinking, like, I am not as really good as I think I am. And then it was spring of 2020 and we broke down skills. And that was my first truly, really good spring, I think, since being in college. And I think that was the beginning of the transformation.
Yeah. The COVID opportunity, I guess opportunity is maybe a good word of something that's, you know, was horrible to go through COVID, all that, but it was an opportunity for programs to really, like you said, break down skill. Sometimes we only had 3 people in the gym if people were quarantined or whatever, but that 2020 COVID season was huge for us. Not only did we have you and Tori and the others that got their COVID year, Claire Chausse later, and there were a bunch of others that used their extra year with us, which was huge. But like you said, we got to have the fall and the spring that year to train. When we go through 2020, what I think of is the bubble. But before that, you know, we had that quick little season in the fall, and then we're building up towards the bubble. The bubble was one of the, like, we don't talk about it enough, but it was so cool. Like, I don't know, what was your take on the bubble? And then I'll go through kind of my memories, because that was a really, it sucked to be away from our families and away from everything for so long in that bubble. But the experience of that with the team and with the group was really cool and something I don't talk about enough, but it's like you said, a core memory. What do you remember of the bubble?
Yeah. Okay. Hanging out with the team and stuff in the big conference room, and y'all, we did Pong, and you guys arranged the tables in a different shape every day, like rectangle, star, hexagon.
We did different seats every day, I think. And we did, like you said, have a big conference room. We were really lucky. I mean, it was
huge.
Almost a ballroom. So we were able to, like you said, we played water pong and we played spike ball, and I think we had a water pong tournament, which was awesome. But
yeah.
I forgot about the
rearranging
of the tables.
On the team.
You and Allegra? I had a Maya. And I know Todd, I forgot who he played with. I feel bad. I can't remember. Do you remember who Todd had? It might have been Big Rage, Big Kahuna. I'm not sure, but he still has, won.
Maybe.
We had made like a little certificate and he has it in his office still.
No way.
Yeah.
That's great. But like the hanging out memories are great, but that was when we first started being big into Alani. And
oh, I forgot about that.
Game day routine was like really important. And I would time when I drank my drink. And I remember that all the games kept getting delayed. And so we warmed up and we were fired up and ready to go. And game went 5, so we had to wait, and then they had to clean the court, and I remember it just felt like forever, and I thought that sucked. And then we lost, and I actually ran into Keegan out here.
Really?
The Washington head coach, he was out here coaching one of the younger teams, and I was like, hey, I'm Ann Stevenson, I don't know if you remember me, we played you guys, you came back and beat us. And he knew the exact score. I was like,
oh,
I'm
sure they probably talked. I don't remember the score, I just know we blew it in the fifth. We were up probably 6 points or something. Pitt, I think, ended up winning. We would have played Pitt, which is crazy because it ended up happening like later on down the road. We played Pitt last year. But it was a cool opportunity in the bubble.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, the big conference room was so cool. I can't believe how much we got tested that year. I mean, we got tested during season every morning at like 7, it felt like, or maybe it was 3 times a week.
That's
And then in the bubble, we'd walk over, we'd get tested, and then they'd kind of put us in a holding area. And then like 2 people would get called back always, like, oh no, like what's going to happen? And then we were lucky we didn't have anybody that had anything happen. But I do remember Rice got sent home. So Rice was supposed to play, I forget who it was, but they were the ones who got, they had somebody that tested positive and got sent home. But other than that, everybody else was pretty lucky with all that. I don't know. Well, 2020, we move on from that into 2021. Which is like, I don't know, like we're so far removed from it that sometimes if you don't put yourself back in the moment, but we went undefeated for the entire year. I mean, at what point did it feel like I don't know, was it even a possibility? Was it like, hey, we looked at the schedule and thought we could beat everybody? I'm curious from a player's perspective, because I'll tell you, you know, the preseason, we felt like the first 2 to 3 weeks, hey, we can win all these matches, we should. And then we went on a gauntlet of Kentucky, Purdue, Nebraska, and I don't think it was in that order. And I remember as coaches, we're like, if we win 2 out of 3 of this, that would be like awesome. one out of three, we can still be pretty good seeded. Like, we just need to play well against these really good tournament teams. And then we end up beating all three. Like, at what point for you was there a pivot point of like, this is our year? Because then we go undefeated, we're the number one seed, we end up losing in the final four. But we certainly like shifted that year from like underdog to like, all right, this is like our year. What was that year like for you?
I think after beating Nebraska or maybe Purdue, because I think that was the first time we'd beaten them in a while.
A long time.
I remember choking the last time we played them because I went on visits there when I was transferring, a visit. And I remember when we played them, I was like, I want to like prove to them that I made the right decision. And I did horribly. And this time that we played them, I remember it wasn't really like a thought. It was more like I'm good and they should know it, but it wasn't my first thought. And I remember thinking afterwards that that was a good feeling. And then beating Nebraska, I didn't know what to expect going into that game, but it definitely wasn't a sweep. And then we swept and it didn't even feel difficult either. It was just crazy. And you cried after the game.
Oh, great.
And that, I still have the video of Danny coming in the locker room and us celebrating afterwards. I watch that sometimes.
You do, huh? I do remember I shed some tears after that. I mean, I spent 8 years, you know, working there. I was a manager, a GA. I've talked about it on this podcast too of my time there. And yeah, it was just, it's wild because I remember being on the other side of that. And I remember how hard it is to beat that, just any team there when you have that big environment against you. And it's just teams start to just cough up points. And there were so many times I was on the other bench, you know, coaching at Nebraska where it was like, oh man, this team has a great opportunity to beat us. And they would just find a way to like shoot themselves in the foot. There was kind of like a buffer of 2 points just because of the arena and the history and the recruits that are on that team all the time. And we just came in for some reason and like none of that affected us. And they always put the fans like on the top row. And like we had the momentum most of the match. So it was like awkward in there because it was like this little line of 2 rows that was like, you could barely hear them. It was like an airplane. It was so far. I was like, wah. And it was like silent other than that. It was really weird. But yeah, that was pretty cool. For me, the pivot point, I think, was Purdue because we had struggled to beat them. We ended up, I think, sweeping them. We beat Kentucky in five, which was another kind of, you know, monkey off our back. And then by the time we went to Nebraska, I feel like that was after those two, we were kind of like, all right, this is house money. Like, let's just play great. And that's what we did. So, and that was, like you said, the Alani's. I remember driving through Nebraska, through Lincoln, trying to find the Alani's because we didn't travel with them on the plane. And then finding like one store because the Alani's were new. It was like this new energy drink you guys were all drinking. And I went to like 4 different stores that morning to try and find them because, like you said, we were all really into that game day routine. But, all right.
It's so, still a big deal for me. I drink a Stardust before every game.
Still with the Alani.
Still.
So how do you get them overseas? Difficult.
I take Celsius powder for games at first, but when my parents visit, they bring me Alani's and it really helps. I mean, it takes me back to the good feeling, which the psychologist spoke about today, the sensory details that you can remember from success. And for me,
sensory details. That's really interesting. I like that. So what can that be for other people? So for you, we've nailed it. It's like the taste of the Alani 2 hours before a match is just like, boom, I'm ready to go. Like, did she mention other things that other people use? That's really interesting.
She said something about ice water. I didn't know if she meant drinking it. I don't feel like you would, I don't know what you'd do with it beyond drink it, but she mentioned that. This was a quick meeting. It was kind of like an overview. My first time meeting her. Talked a lot about breath and like grounding and touching the people around you, but I feel like those are pretty normal things.
Interesting. Do you still do visualization like overseas? Because I know we did that, but it was run by like the program. Like I would run it. Do you still find a way to do that on your own, or is it like, is that important for you in your game day routine still?
I watch some of my best games, my contacts on Volumetrics. And when I'm overseas, this is cheesy, but I watch Louisville hype videos. And this past season, you do remember the one Asan made for you guys this year of Georgia Tech. And it's your visualization
thing.
Oh,
yeah. That was a cool one he made.
It was my favorite one of this past season of you guys. And I watched that a lot.
That was pretty cool. I don't really get nervous for that stuff. But being mic'd up, I was like, all right, don't say anything stupid or like fumble over your words.
Yeah.
And like... like long pauses and stuff. But Asad Ali, we're giving a shout out to him, our video dude for Louisville here. He does a great job. So I want to wrap up 2021. You can go wherever you want with this too. But the one thing I always have to bring up in 2021 is like there was a moment for me in that Wisconsin match where it was, and it was actually the ball, the finish of the play, it was like a super long rally, and you know, it's this full stadium, and you get called over on like a free ball. Like the free ball was coming over and you hit it, but it was like the longest rally. The place was going nuts. And regardless of how the play ended, like I have to go through that play with you because like we had just got done with COVID and that was one of the first big events any of us had ever been to because everything was like half capacity or half whatever. Like you still couldn't go to a movie theater at full capacity. And we went to the stadium. It was full. It was packed, every seat. And it was like that match was like, it, to me, so important for volleyball, like throughout the world, but for sure in the United States, it was like, this is the biggest thing for volleyball in the last like 2 to 3 years, like this moment. But that match to me was just so important for volleyball in the United States. What was your takeaway maybe even from that match or just from 2021 as a whole?
I don't think I've ever felt as confident as I did during that game. Like even now when I know I'm a better player, it just doesn't feel like it sometimes. But just the confidence we had, and I think I just like trusted y'all's game plan always. Like, I don't know. I just trust everyone on the court, and I don't think I was really even nervous. I think I was like nervous with excitement, but I don't think I was panicked at all. I remember just looking around a ton, like this arena's crazy, and we're here. But I don't think you guys put any pressure on it, and I think the game day serving pass was just fun. And I remember just feeling like you guys were as ready as we were, and it just felt special.
Yeah. I mean, the match was what it was, and, you know, it, like you said, I felt the same way, where it was just like, this is our moment, and it ended the way it ended, but, it, like, there's no, like, sour grapes over that. I don't know. I think, you know, when I look at your career, and, you know, you obviously weren't on the team last year, but you had a huge impact on the team in 2022. It's like, when we were in the bubble, we played Washington, and like you said, you talked to Keegan, he talks about that match of, like, here's the score, we were down so much, and it was like, people could describe it as like just epic comeback by them or a collapse from us or whatever it was. But then the next year we go undefeated. It's like a lot of teams don't recover from that. And then, okay, we're undefeated and we lose in the semis. And then it's like, oh, that was your shot. And then it's like we go even further in 2022. So it's like there's something there where like you talked about, I just had so much trust. And I think trust is so big for that. Is that something that like throughout that year was developed? It was from certain players, it was from certain experiences. You just have to win enough to develop that, like, because that trust and that building, some of those things we described can really linger. They can kind of bring you back down and it's hard to get through them. And it's like we've blown through them in the last few years. Like, what was it for you in 2021 when you talk about, man, the trust? Like, what do you think about that built that?
I don't know if other colleges do it this way, but I feel like how close we were at position wise was such a big deal for me. Like, I don't even know what the outsides worked on. Like, we would always be on our separate court at the beginning of practice. And I remember feeling like you just thought we were capable of like anything. Like, we would do stuff men did. And I don't know when you started doing the stuff like mega box, like block off a box and just working with our hands. And then in the spring, I think we had the be tougher challenge of like finger push-ups because you said it was going to make us get more blocks, and just like seeing you put in so much work with like fine-tuning little things that maybe worked, maybe didn't, but I just felt like the middles were like this, we were just like this clan of like elite athletes, and I remember just trusting that Todd was doing the same thing with the outsides, and I just felt like the trust within positions was good. And I guess that just led to trust with everyone. And just like we'd watch video on like strangers, like here's some middle who's unathletic for Long Beach State, but look at his hands. Like
that guy was not unathletic, but I know who you're talking about. We did watch a lot of obscure video. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great. So it's just a lot of little things, I guess, too. And it's, I don't know. Like, we were both just at Tori's wedding, and I just remember Trent talking about it's the people around you, you know, and he gave a great speech, and he talked about a lot of people be like, oh, you guys did a great job raising them, but it's like all you people here. It was a great speech about that, but when you're describing that trust, I think that's what it is too. It's like you didn't name like one thing. It's like all the people around you. I think that's what makes the experience. So I don't know. I could go on and on about the Louisville days. I think this is probably as like behind the curtains as you're going to get from a conversation. I forget, like, I mean, because me and you have talked like a million times, right? So it's like, that's a pretty like those are some pretty, I would say, like just pure thoughts about the experience there. And I don't know, it was a really, really, I wouldn't say humbling. Is humbling the word? I don't know. It was a great experience to coach you. Let me just put it that way. Like it was really, really fun to coach you. And you taught me like to learn from players. And I always was learning from players, but it's like learn the most from your players. Because a lot of times, like you said, we'll watch those obscure players, or we'll watch some player that we'll never coach that's a pro or whatever and say, this is how it should be done. But it's like, you taught me to like learn from our players, study our players the most and learn what makes them great. And it's like, that's helped me a lot as a coach. So again, you were super, super fun to coach. So wrapping up your time at Louisville though, you finish up, you get engaged to Big Dunk, and then you head over to Turkey. He's still back in Louisville finishing up, and you guys are separated, you're engaged, you're planning a wedding while you're playing your first year of pro. Talk to me about that experience of just going from playing to going overseas. You're in a new country, you're by yourself, you've got all this stuff going on back home. What's that like?
Turkey was really hard, and the people around me were really good, and my coach was really good person. I still talk to him a little bit, and he works with their national team, the Turkish national team, so when we play them, I always go give them a hug, but it was really lonely. I was the only American, and I went from feeling like I was the best, and I was one of the best in college, to being like, no one knew who I was, and the game's faster, and I don't know. I cried a lot. I think I was mean to Duncan, honestly. Like, I don't know. It was really difficult being far apart, and I was just jealous he was getting to be with you guys and with all the people I loved. And I was just in this tiny apartment where my water wasn't always hot. And there was the call to prayer every morning and Ramadan, a man banging on his drums at like 3 a.m. in my city, town, tiny town. But it was just hard, but it was good for me.
So, and you came out on the other end. So obviously you were an All-American 2021. You're in the mix for the national team. Turkey is a huge year for you. Coming back to the national team is also huge. But for a girl from Lawrence, South Carolina, who's all of a sudden in this country all by herself and just thrown into that, I mean, how do you come out on the other end? You said it was a struggle. You cried a lot. But clearly you had like some tools. You had something that got you through that. What got you through that, that you were like, I am still on this mission to play for the national team and to continue to play pro and do all that? Because a lot of people would be like, hey, that was an experience, but it's not an experience I want anymore. Like, what did you have? What tools did you have? Or what did you learn that can get you through that and you would stay in this career?
I think I still came off, like coming off of such a good season, I was like, I started off fresh and I started off with a ton of like confidence. And while it did go away, I think if I would have started from a rough college season, I don't think I would have cared for it. A lot of prayer. I feel like I just kept having to remind myself that like God had me there for a reason. And I did get to know some pretty special people. And one of the girls I played with is the Hungarian national team captain. And she actually was on my team in Italy this past season. And it was really cool to play with her because she kind of coached me in Turkey and then got to see me come out of that season with the national team and go play with her in Italy. And I was kind of just more mature and just reminding myself that it's just a season being apart from Duncan. It's just a stepping stone to what I want to accomplish and a lot of prayer.
So that Hungarian national team setter, what's her name?
It's Greta Smetsgari. That's not right.
I'm curious. You said she like coached you basically in Turkey and then she's with you again. So like, that's obviously a seasoned veteran in like a different, just, I mean, it's not NCAA volleyball, it's pro. It's not a different sport, but it's a completely different experience. So what's the big takeaway from her? Like when you look at her as a mentor, you look at her as like, oh, I would like to do this for a younger player when I'm her age. Like, what was that?
I think she does a good job of what the psychologist talked to me today about, which is like neutrality, just being neutral about some things. I don't think I ever saw her lose her cool. She did really good for us in Turkey. And this year in Italy, she was one of our best players. But I remember she had one awful game against a really bad team that we needed to beat. And she came off the court and one of our subs went in for her. And she was like, I just wasn't really feeling that good today. And she hit a ball like outside the antenna down the line. And she's 32, I think. She started out in Hungary, went to Germany, like worked her way up. And this year she's going to a better team in Italy. So I'm really proud of her. And just the way she was like, you know, just wasn't my day. And then she's just cheering for the girl who went in for her. And I was like, she's like 30. Shouldn't she be like expecting more of herself or like angry? But she was just totally fine. And I want to be like that.
How do you balance that as a player? Because I think a lot of players would say like, oh, that makes me feel like I don't care. Or people don't think my standards are high. Like, how do you get past that? Because I think a lot of people would be stuck in the either perfectionist or like, oh, if I act like this, people will think I don't have a high expectation for myself, or I just don't care. Like, how do you get past that?
I don't know. I texted you about this. I feel like this right now. Like, I bruised my retina, and so I can't practice for live for 2 weeks. And I felt so like calm about it. And I texted you and you said, if you lived and died by every little thing that happened, I feel like you would burn out pretty quickly. But sometimes I feel like that. It's just a different feeling than college, because it's not like you're with the same team, same people, building for 4 years. You built the culture you're so passionate about. It's like, it's just an individual going from team to team to team. And I'm still figuring that out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're still kind of in the initial steps of your journey. Really interesting stuff. So first years in Turkey, and then obviously a range of emotions there. And then you end up settling on Italy. And then in the meantime, you and Big Dunk, you guys get married. He comes out to Italy with you. So for, you know, I think about when I got married, we moved in that first year, and it's like there's like some big life events. One of them you're still waiting for, which is having a child, but it's like moving, getting married, having a child. Those are like three of the biggest ones you can do. You did two of them in the same year, which is crazy. And you didn't even move. You just moved countries. So you got married, you moved countries. What is it like in your first year of marriage, but then also moving out of the country with them? And I mean, that's just like so much going on. Was that something that I don't know if I could have gotten through it without you, or man, I feel like we've been married for 10 years now because we learned so much. Talk to me a little bit on the personal side of getting married and then all of a sudden, boom, we're going to a new country. Let's figure it out.
I think seeing on Instagram, like all the highlight reels of overseas, I was like, it's going to be an adventure. And even people like you who are so excited for us, you're like, oh my gosh, if we could go to Italy. And so I think I had high expectations and it was really cool. But I think what we realized is the importance of a routine. Like the first 2 weeks we were there, we were just arguing, like annoyed with each other because literally nothing was easy. Like the grocery store, and I would ask him where something was. He's like, I don't know. And it's like, usually one of us would know the answer to something, but neither of us knew what anything was. And so that was hard. And then, like some days were just boring. And I always thought like being married, I would have someone and we'd talk about something every day or like do something. But some days, like, we just didn't have a lot to talk about. And I remember thinking something was wrong or like I wasn't trying hard enough. But I guess you're how many years in? So maybe you can tell me if that's normal. Like some days are just not that special.
Yeah. Marriage is such a cool thing. It really is. Cause it's like, I don't know. Like you said, yeah, that's okay. You have days like that, I guess. And you learn to kind of like look back and appreciate that you had those days, but then like that those days made you even stronger because it's like, we're okay in our skin and who we are and who we're helping each other become. But I don't know if I have great, like I never went through the going overseas and then one of you is playing pro and the other one's trying to kind of figure it out. I mean, the dynamics of that are as challenging as you could have at any point in a marriage, let alone when you first get married and you're trying to figure all that out too. So I commend you guys. I mean, I saw you guys at, like we talked about Tori's wedding, we just saw everybody there, and I mean, you guys are obviously like awesome for each other. And I mean, Big Dunk is like the man. I think he's just, you found such a great match.
He
and
is.
We always kind of, you know, you took a weird, you know, you go to Auburn and then Louisville, and it's like Louisville, the volleyball thing seemed like, oh, this was what I was meant to come here. But you probably were meant to come here to find Dunk more than anything. I mean, when you find your life partner,
yeah,
and that, I mean, that trumps really everything, you know, outside of that, outside of volleyball and all that. It's like, that's what it's all about. So I'm glad you guys have each other for this journey.
He's the best.
He is the man. I mean, we can't pump him up enough. That maybe that'll be the title of this episode. It's like a celebration of Big Dunk. All right. So You get through Italy, and you're playing an A1 in Italy. I don't think we should just gloss over the experience of that. I mean, you're playing in pretty much, is that the top league? Like, I have a hard time. I see everything on Volumetrics, but yeah, that's the top league. I know it kind of can shift from years to years or whatever, but I mean, A1 Italy, everybody kind of would look at that as like the gold standard. Like, if you play there, there's nowhere else you can play that's higher. For you in your second year of playing pro, I know when you first got out there, it's not like you were, hey, you're coming here and you're from the States and you're our starter. Like, you had to grind to get in the mix and go through all that. Like, what is the experience of playing in the absolute top league in the world?
I remember thinking that I just had a 4-month season in Turkey. I just played some with the national team. Like, I'm going to go there and it's going to be easy. And like, I couldn't connect with the setter for like the first 2 months. And we just had to figure each other out. And like, I talked to Haley Washington. She's like, that never changes. Like, every team you go to, I mean, it might happen faster, but there's always adjustment time. And I don't know how much I can say about my coach, but we had one rough, really rough coach. And I expressed some concerns to him. And I remember he told me, well, you sit the bench because you're out of shape, and you sat the bench with your national team, then that got you out of shape. And then you came here not ready to play. And this is A1, and you're ineffective in block. You can't get a kill. Why do you ask me for these things when you can't perform? And it's everyone's dream to make the Olympics. And he made me cry. And I remember thinking like, ooh, this is going to be a really good story one day, like if I make the Olympics. But and I tried to let that like motivate me, but I don't think I'm someone who can be like motivated by anger. So that was short lived. And so it was just like a long season of figuring out how can I do okay and good. Like you say, not great, not bad. Just I got to find some middle ground, and how can I do that consistently?
Yeah. And it's worth noting.
Stay motivated.
It's worth noting you guys did have a coaching change in that season. We don't have to go too much in the weeds.
Three.
There. Oh, three. I only knew about the two. So you had, that was your initial coach where you had that kind of tough conversation. I wouldn't even call tough conversations are like, they're like respectful or whatever you would want to call it. That seemed like it was a little bit of berating, I guess you would say. So that was your first coach. You had another, and then you switched again before the end of the year?
Before I got to Cuneo, there was an older gentleman who was a coach who was supposed to be really good. I never met him. Switched to this guy who was kind of rude. Switched again, but between these coaches there was an interim, the assistant coach, and then our last coach, who I really like, Massimo. I'm happy to play for him. And we had two managers and changing presidents, so it was a crazy year.
Very unique stuff. I mean, I think that international experience, there's so many people, like you said, like, oh, it's going to be an adventure and it's going to be all that. And it's like, it is still a job. Like, you're still getting paid, and there's an expectation with you getting paid for what they're going to get out of you. And like you said, I hear bored a lot. Like, a lot, there's a lot of like downtime, you know, there's just not as much going on. There's not, you know, in a traditional work environment, you would have company parties and trips and all that. And it's just, you know, like you said, you're playing with other professionals who some have families and they have other stuff going on. It's not like college where you're hanging out all the time. It's you're kind of in silos a little bit. All right. Well, moving forward. So you find yourself out in Anaheim right now, which we touched on at the beginning. So what does the future hold for you? Like, where's your mindset at right now? You know, again, I wouldn't say a different person, but just the evolvement of you from the first time I met you in the portal to now you're the seasoned professional, seasoned. I mean, you're two years in, but you've played a lot of national team and you've played in the VNL and all of that. You know, what does the future hold for you? Where's your mindset moving forward? I'm just really curious because let's just use 2019 as a comparison. It was like, I want to be an All-American. I want to do all this. And then you had this kind of learning experience where it was like, okay, it was more team success and it was just, you became this great leader. And so I'm just curious, in your pro career, it feels like it might be the same path of like, you don't know what you're getting into. You don't know what to be motivated by, what your expectations are, and you're evolving. And I feel like you're kind of in that transition phase here. What are you learning and what's your mindset moving forward?
I'm trying not to be selfish out here. And one Bible verse that I'm trying to really think about and like reflect on this year is like, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but consider others above yourself. Because there's a lot of opportunity in the middle position this year because some players are finished, and it's easy to want success for myself, but I don't want to become the person who wants my success, but because another person fails. And it's easy to want and to like feel like inside, like if they didn't do good, then I could take that. And I want to be someone here who can be happy for someone who makes a roster over me, because like the likelihood of that happening is like really high. I'm not going to do good all the time this summer. And I talked to Micah Hancock. She'd be a great get for this, but she's kind of cool. I don't know.
I did the very first podcast with Raquel and she talked about Micah. So that's twice I've heard her. So maybe I should reach out.
You should. But she said, man, I've been cut from so many rosters, and she's a gold medalist. And I was just telling her how this year I just feel more pressure. I feel a little more nervous. I have higher expectations for myself, which Karch says don't have expectations, but have standards. And she said, I've been cut from so many rosters. She's like, you know, you're a baller. And I mean, whatever happens is going to happen. And so I'm just trying to keep my head and not change who I am. Because it is a really competitive environment and it's easy to get swept away with that. So
you mentioned Karch. We haven't talked about him yet. And you're definitely somebody that like you're a nerd for the game in no uncertain terms. Like you love volleyball, you follow it. I mean, Karch is like the guy in United States volleyball. I think I could go on and on about Karch. I think he's done so much for volleyball in our country, obviously as a player, but more so he's done more as a coach, I think, just the way that the juniors game is played because of how he runs the national team and all that. I could go on and on about Karch. But for you who sometimes maybe builds people up in your head or, you know, used to do that, obviously Karch is like a big deal. What was it like meeting him? And then where's your relationship find it now? Like bring me through a little bit of the evolvement of your relationship with Karch.
I texted him. Well, I went to a tryout when I was at Auburn and I introduced myself to him and then I didn't make the team. I got alternate and then I didn't even get picked for alternate. And then at the All-American banquet after our 2021 season, his number was on like a paper we had. And I texted him because he had COVID. I was like, hey, I know you're probably sitting around doing nothing. I'm Anna Stevenson. I just blah, blah, blah what I did. I want to play for you one day. And we texted and then he invited me out that summer. And nothing special about getting to know him that summer. But this year, he's just such a deep thinker and it can be a little intimidating because it makes me feel like I want to say something profound, but I think the best conversations I've had with him are when I'm just myself and he's a little amused by it and he gives me some wisdom in response.
So what you to say he gives you wisdom in response, what's one Karchism that you think about when you're describing that? You're like, oh, I remember when he said this, or I remember I went to him with this and got really good feedback from him. What's one core memory of Karch so far?
The other day I had a meeting with him. Have you seen a video of him tearing down a net in a beach
yes.
game?
Yes. So you're kind of stealing a little bit of, I'd love to someday have him on the podcast, but I don't know when the time would be right. But I want to talk about that because when I listen to Karch talk, that's not the same guy.
And that's what I asked him.
Oh my gosh.
He does play. Yeah.
So tell me, that's like my that's like my burning question for him. Yes.
I feel good. So we have player meetings and he gets lunch with you, whatever, checks in. And he at the end, he was like, so do you have any questions for me? I was like, always. And I said, I've seen this video of you tearing down a net in a fit of rage. I was like, where did that go? Like, I just don't see it anymore. And he said that the ref made a terrible call, and he said that after the game, they had to drive immediately to the airport. And he said no one said a word in the car because they were just scared of him until his wife started laughing, and they just died laughing at him. But he said now he feels that still, and I see that come out sometimes without a system setting. That's one of his things he's really particular about and has really high standards for, and that can frustrate him. But he said that when something happens now, he likes to give himself a gap of when he responds to that. And he said, I just don't think it would really benefit Stevie if I yelled at you every time you did something or tore down a net. So I guess he just pauses. Maybe he breathes like the psychologist said. But he said that he's really evolved from that. And now he's really calm. Like it's really impressive.
It's crazy. It's what I always wonder with these great players. It's like he's accomplished so much. And like, I wonder if he thinks that he needed to be that way as a player to be successful, but now as a coach, he doesn't. And he's got these, you know, methods or whatever to deal with it. But I'm always so intrigued by that because, yeah, like you said, there's such a change there where it's like, but I wonder if he would say, hey, as a player, I needed to be like that to be at my best. It's really, really intriguing. I could go on and on about Karch. You talked about out of system setting. It's like his thing. Like, it's like, oh my God, like if we miss that out of system set, every coach has their like thing. And I think players do too. What's like the thing for you that you're just like, this is like what has to go right for me. Or like, this one thing, like what people call it like their ick, right? Like what's your volleyball ick?
Maybe when middles don't transition, I don't know. That's a part of my game that I think I take pride in, healthy pride in, and I really care about. And I think y'all kind of fostered that. And so I feel like it's really evident to me when a middle doesn't work hard in transition. But luckily, we don't have that problem here.
Well, part of the reason you transition so well is you're so fast. Is there anything else? Like, let's say I'm a middle who's not. Like, you're blessed with, like, speed. You're very, like, quick off the ground and all that. Like, is there anything else, like, transition-wise that you're just like, I wish middles knew this or I wish they did this more as opposed to just, like, if they were as fast as me, they could transition? Because you have, like, you transition that fast because you're that fast. But, like, technically, What can middles learn from you in transition?
I think it's about efficiency. I don't really think I'm the most efficient person. I take a lot of little steps. I do a lot of like jumping around. And I bet that'll go away with age, honestly, but I just have the energy for it now. And I think Tori Dixon is a great example of a player who's like really simple in her movements, but I mean, she's available. And I remember the first summer I was in the gym last summer watching her transition. I thought, like, why do I not make it look that easy? Like, I feel like I make it kind of look like I don't make it look hard, but it just looks like I'm working incredibly hard. She just steps off the net and she's at the 10-foot line. Like, her footwork was just really simple and efficient. And I remember being really impressed by that.
Yeah, I would describe your game as you look like you're working really hard, but that's not a bad thing. You always look like you're working super hard and you're always out of breath.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, though. I feel like you should be out of breath.
Today I was, I wasn't on like the live court. So, but on Tuesdays and Fridays, we need to have the workload of a 5-set match.
Tuesdays and Fridays. So twice a week, you're trying to get the workload of a 5-game match.
Yeah. It's Monday is medium, Tuesday hard, Wednesday, no jump, Thursday, medium, Friday hard. And Karch came over today. He's like, I know you're not on this court, but you need to make sure that you're getting your heart rate up. And I don't know how many balls I hit today. I just, like, he wasn't on my court, so I was like, oh, he's going to look over here. I need to be jumping. And we did a lot, and I was dying. I was really out of breath.
So which of those days do you look forward to the most? So I love how you broke down the week, but what's the best day?
Competition Friday is the best day. Before the day starts, we meet at the whiteboard, and you write a focus, or we talk about something, and last Friday, we spoke about what makes Friday different than the other days. And the general like idea was that we don't focus on a specific skill. And Annie Drew, she has like really good like Annie-isms that stick with me. She's one of my favorite people here. And she said that during the week, it's so easy to smother a skill, which I never heard anyone say that, but we do smother skills here. Like you analyze down to the smallest thing, and it's easy to because you need to perform, you need to get better, but Friday is like the chance to just play. We play 5 sets to 25, I think, maybe the fifth one to 15 sometimes, but it's our chance to not smother any skills.
I like that. I've never heard that, smother skills. Well, when you're talking about Annie Drew's, I love the Annie-isms. Is there any good Annie-ism or any good story that you could share of just kind of an experience with her?
Well, okay, two. She said once, if you don't pee when you hit, you're not hitting hard enough. And I'm not saying she does that every time, but she is one to swing for the fences. And she even talks about how Danielle Catino and Jordan Thompson in her position are so physical. It can be like hard not to compare because she's just a different type of athlete. But what she brings to the table is like an incredible arm. And I'm just really impressed with how she works because it would be easy to compare to them. And when I first got here, she said that there's people like Jordan Larson who live, breathe volleyball, and they watch video when they go home. And I think at the time I thought, oh, that's going to be me. But Annie said, there's people like me who, when I leave, I don't talk about it. And I come back and I work hard, and we have to respect each other and how we work. And now I feel like I'm drifting more towards the Annie perspective. And that kind of scares me sometimes. Like, am I working hard enough? Like, do I need to go back to watching video so much? But I feel like there's an ebb and flow there. And I was glad that that kind of gave me the freedom to feel like I could be like that too.
Very cool. That's some good insight. I mean, it seems like if you're going to have a long pro career, you're going to have to evolve. And that seems like what you're doing.
Yeah.
So Anna Stevenson Hall, Anna Hall now. You'll always be Steve for me. It sounds like with USA, you're Stevie. But I appreciate you coming on the podcast. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to Out of Rotation with your host, Dan Meskey, presented by the American Volleyball Network. Until next time. Come on, don't give them any free points. Always stay in rotation.